Hi, I'm John Batchelor. The future, forecasting the future, predicting the future. It's fun. You don't have to look at your notes afterwards. You just say it and it's gone. However, George Friedman, the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, is a forecaster, a professional forecaster, an accurate professional forecaster, identifying geopolitical events over the next 10, 20, even 70 years. And I first came across George's gift when I saw, well, Stratfor.com, but when I saw the book that identified Poland, Turkey, and Japan as major players in the 21st century. It struck me as a matter of geography at the time. Now I see, watching the Ukraine conflict and the confrontation with the People's Republic of China and the hesitation of NATO waiting for Mr. Erdogan's re-election. All of that illustrates what George saw in the writing of his book about the next 100 years, the next 10 years. George, a very good day to you. How is it that you think, as you're approaching the new forecasting book for the second half of this century, how is it that you think of your successes in the past? Are you pleased with them, or did you miss something that you can now identify? Good evening to you.
Well, we always miss something that we can identify. But the basic thing that I saw was the key that we were pivoting on was the fall of the Soviet Union and the question of whether it could resurrect itself in some other political form. We also saw the rise of China. And when I wrote this, this was the time of the historical belief that in 14 days, the Chinese will outstrip the United States and so on. So the foundation of this is, first, the United States was going to be an enormous power, is an enormous power, and will continue to be an enormous power. The largest economy in the world, the largest military. Then I asked, okay, what will pivot? Well, what happens after Russia collapses and cannot rebuild itself? It will try to solve the problem by attacking westward, building strategic depth. And that will fail. It will fail because the Russians don't have the military power. The key country that will be blocking it would be Poland. And that Poland, in a continent of like Europe, which really is in many ways morbid in the sense of foreign policy and so on, Poland would become the most dramatic and dynamic country in the world, driving the Europeans in various directions, which they've had. So if you begin with the idea that the United States has not begun to peak, that the reconstruction of Russia is very difficult, and second, that they will try to create more strategic depth by attacking Ukraine, Belarus, what have you, these countries, then Poland comes out right there. So the way you do it is take a look at what has to happen. And if you can recognize the fact that the Russians were not going to be able to rebuild themselves, the Americans were not in great decline, then you can identify Poland as a power, but also Japan. The United States had confrontations with the Chinese. They were very successful. The Chinese were terrified of the United States. There was a different take on it. They were terrified the United States would close their East Coast ports and they couldn't export. So they bluffed themselves in various ways, and Japan would arise. And the United States loves having allies to hand things off to. So Japan, as it's now doing, is building a large navy. And so you work through it by seeing the current necessities that are there and try to extrapolate them. And it's really not, you don't have to be a genius to do this, because I'm not.
Turkey is an example to me of a very powerful nation that's punching below its weight, although it is geographically perfect, Asia Minor, the gateway to Asia, also with a very large and successful army in fighting in the region around its borders. Has Turkey yet to live up to its possibilities because of? I don't know why.
Well, Turkey is a bridge between Asia and Europe. It has always been that. In the Byzantine Empire, it still is. It is struggling to find a way to exploit that geographic position and has had a tremendous battle internally, a battle between Islam and secularism. It first to try to marginalize the Muslims, which they never managed to. And Erdogan, for all his stupidity and his clumsiness that everybody accuses him of, did what was necessary. He brought the Muslims into the system. And now they're there, and they hold office and so on, and so are the secularists. So now the platform has been built for Turkey, an inherently prosperous country because of its position, to begin exploiting it. But they had to deal with the question that Kemal Atatürk left them of marginalizing the Muslims.
Is Turkey the cop on the beat in the Middle East? Is that its future?
Well, its future is historically, and you must see what they were before, as a major transition point for wealth, and also an attempt to, in a limited way, control the roads coming in and out, making sure that they weren't cut off. So the Turks were very smart in the past in what they did. They didn't try to conquer the world. They weren't Britain. What they tried to do is simply to identify what they needed and hold them. And they did that, and this is what they're going to do now. Right now, they're intelligently staying out of the way. They're building, and they're not ready for that yet. They're slower than I thought they would be. But on the other hand, they're on the path I expected.
Now for the future, the second half of the century, 2050 to 2100, the nation that always pops up is what about is India. Is that a part of the success of the second half of the century?
It is part of it, but it's a deeply flawed part. The problem with India is it's not a country. It is a series of independent countries historically and hostile that were forced together by the British into something called India. So one of the problems is, for example, right now, India is very important. It is facing China. It's in a deepening alliance with the United States. It shows signs of being the China of the second half of the century. But the problem they have is that the internal tensions are so high that the only way the British could do it was by occupying them and forcing them to behave in their sense. And this they can't overcome. And therefore, it is not going to be China. It's going to be India, a sometimes powerful nation, a sometimes useful one, but not one that dominates.
Looking at the Global South, and India is included in the Global South, the Global South has one potential superpower in Brazil. Is it capable of projecting power in its own continent and then throughout the world?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, firstly, the geography internally of Brazil makes utilization of much of its land impossible. There are jungles, it's just not possible. So, you know, it's one of those cases where you're looking for a big country, there's a big country. Being a big country isn't enough. And the Brazilians have to struggle against nature.
This would be much the same observation of Nigeria. And I'm looking at big countries, George, because we both know that growing populations are capable of generating prosperity. Is Nigeria potential, or is it too ripped by factions?
Well, it's not going to be a preeminent power, but it can be much more powerful than it is now. There, the possibility is that the factions can be controlled, that a powerhouse would be there. And also, people invest there on a cautious basis. So that's not unknown. So when you look at the future, you ask the question, will outside money flow into it? Is there a military force that can protect it? And the answer with Nigeria is not quite, but not anywhere near impossible.
And then there's the United States of America in the second half of the century. We're going all AI all the time. Will that continue, or fat of the decade, George?
Well, I mean, we always have technologies. The technology that I think will dominate the United States is going to be medicine. During COVID, we discovered that our medical staff is not very good at handling crises like that. The time's too much. But secondly, is a demographic problem. We're getting older. Various diseases are taking us and making us consumer, but not able to produce. Birth rates are down. So we're coming into a period in which the elderly will be the burden on the United States. There must be solutions for things like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. This is a social development. And all of the social revolutions, economic revolutions, you know, technical revolutions are linked together. And so we see in the United States the ability to solve these problems. AI is nice, but making sure that the elderly don't bankrupt the country by being ill and non-productive, that's the essence of the problem.
George Friedman is the founder and chairman of Geopolitical Futures, a subscription site I highly recommend. I'm John Batch.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.